This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me this week is Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I'm glad that you're here, and you're not like Jake, only appearing in, you know, maybe less than half of the episodes of The Orb.
That's true, Chris. I was going to say, I believe that I've been on almost every episode of The Orb. I know that I have, I think, missed maybe one. In the run,
well,
you know, so...
The ones that were produced by Cliff Bull, he told me he didn't want you around.
Yeah, so. He just does not like me very much. I don't know why. I've never done anything to Cliff. I've always followed his direction. I'm glad to be here. Cliff could not make it as director this time, so yes, I'm on the episode. And hello, everyone. It's great to have you here.
Yes. And sadly, we did lose Cliff Bull recently. Of course, we did a show remembering him here on The Orb. And if you remember, Sirach Lofton was not in the first, what was it, Matthew? Three episodes, I believe, that Cliff Bull directed, or four out of five. For some reason, Jake just was not in those episodes.
Yeah, which, yeah, I mean, Chris, I don't know. I think we should let the listeners chew on this. But how many episodes was Jake actually in? And try not to use Memory Alpha for this, folks. We'll give you the answer at the end of the show, so you're definitely going to want to stick around for that. But a great trivia question for you to think about. So maybe it was just one of those episodes, Chris. Maybe it didn't necessarily have anything to do with Cliff Bull, although... It did, because we know he really didn't like the character of Jake. So,
apparently, yeah. And let's raise the stakes, Matthew, for the end of the show here.
Oh.
For those of you who think, oh, you know, I know how many episodes Jake was in. That's too easy for me because I'm a diehard Niner. Here's something else. How many episodes was Jake in during the final season of DS9? Which characters were in more episodes than him who did not have their names in the title credits? And also, which character was in way more episodes than Jake Sisko over the course of the series? And I'll give you a hint, it's not Garrick.
Yeah, those are some great questions, Chris. And I think that some of the listeners might be shocked at the answer. I personally just learned a few of those statistics today. And so I really was surprised. Because I think, like Garrick, you know, Jake feels like he's in the episodes, even if he's not, just because you know how important he is to the show. But you're really shocked. You're like, wow, that's really only that many episodes? That's crazy talk.
So we'll reveal those pieces of trivia at the end of the show. But before we get to that, we're going to actually talk about Jake today. Matthew, I think Jake is the only character who is a main cast, and I'm doing air quotes here because he's
ding, ding.
His name is in the right because his name is in the title credits, even though there are quite a few characters on the show who have more prominent roles than he does. I think he's the only main cast member who we have not covered yet in our series of character profiles, and so we're going to remedy that today. Talking about Jake, and the first thing that I wanted to do to jump in here is to tell everyone what was written in the series Bible about the character of Jake, because I think that's important to know up front as we talk about Jake today, Matthew, to see how the character on the show compares to how the character was conceived as they were developing Deep Space Nine. So in the series Bible, it says Jake Sisko, the commander's son, an army brat who doesn't remember life on Earth, has been aboard four different starships and stationed on two planets. This transient lifestyle has taught him how to scope out a new terrain and assimilate quickly. At the same time, he has an inner fear of forming new friendships because he loses them so easily. He dreams of going to live on Earth. He collects holodeck programs of various places on Earth that he uses to try to fulfill his fantasies. Deep inside, he knows that his mom would still be alive if they did not live in space, and he has a suppressed bitterness about it. His father promised there would be other kids on the station. As it turns out, there are only a handful of various alien species. Only one is his age, Nog, a Ferengi teenage boy who is a bad influence. Jake is close with his dad. They are buddies. The boy has no technical expertise at all. He struggles with his homework, but is dedicated to doing his best. So that's the setup of the character, Matthew. After hearing all of that, do you feel like they came close to fleshing this out in the series, or they just really, you know, went in a completely other direction, as is sometimes the case with characters and series Bibles?
Well, I think some of it is there. The bitterness, I think, from space, that part I was kind of shocked to read and hear, is not there. Obviously, he doesn't really care about living on Earth either. That's not a part of his, and his collection of holodeck programs isn't there either.
Fishing?
Yeah. I mean, that's there. But yeah, I think a lot of that stuff doesn't end up there, except for the fact that Nog becomes his best friend, and you know, he's the only one around, and he's a bad influence at the beginning. But the fact that Jake and his dad are close is the one I think they really stick to. And we have talked extensively about that, but it really does happen with the show. You do see it a lot. And that becomes, I think, the main connection we have with Jake for the show is his relationship with Benjamin.
And I think that manifests itself in his friendship with Nog. And that's something that I will mention later on when we talk about some episodes, because there is a moment in an episode that's not really a Jake episode, but where I think highlights this very thing from the series Bible. All right, so let's talk about the background of Jake a little bit, Matthew, because after we had the tri-divisional whiz kid, Wesley Crusher, with the amazing Technicolor sweater, in The Next Generation, who knew everything, could save the ship, could do it all, the writers wanted to let kids be kids on DS9, and they wanted to give us a different view of children in the future and show that not all children, even if they are the children of Starfleet officers, and especially in this case a commanding officer, that they don't all want to go to the academy. They don't all want to follow in their parents' footsteps and be an explorer or a soldier.
Yeah, Chris, I think that you had Wesley in the Technicolor, you know, dream sweater. But luckily, they one-upped that with Jake in his Technicolor jumpsuits. I mean, thank God that they were able to one-up that. Who knew they could do it? But costume designer Blackman just really rocked that. And so, really glad that happened.
So that's Jake and the Technicolor jumpsuit.
Exactly. Jake and the Technicolor jumpsuit. I think we just named the episode. but yeah, I think one of the coolest things in the show at the beginning was that immediately you knew this was not going to be Wesley. And I thought that, to me, kind of drew me to the character a little bit, in the sense that, okay, what are they going to do with this kid? And I thought it was great because they were showing us what it was like to be just kind of a normal kid in the 24th century. You know, Wesley's never normal. You know, he's not really relatable other than The fact that you might relate to the fact that he's just this kind of geeky, out of place person, which, you know, a lot of people can relate to. But Jake's just kind of a normal kid. You know, he does normal things. He kind of gets in trouble every once in a while with his dad and all of that. So I think that that was a really interesting thing for them to try and pull off in the series. Sometimes they're really successful. Sometimes they're not with the character because I think they lose their way with him a little bit and they're not sure what to do. Even Ron Moore talks about that until they decided that they were going to make him a writer. They didn't really know what to do with him. But, you know, earlier in the seasons, just having him be a kid and what life is like in the 21st century, I think through Jake and Nog, we get a kind of a good glimpse at what that's like. You know, and it's a, you know, and something from the Bible is he really is a space brat. He is an army brat. You know, he knows what that's like. He's been in a bunch of different places. And so, that was kind of interesting as well, as just kind of seeing a kid who just kind of rolls with it. You know, he doesn't really get upset about stuff like that. He just kind of goes into a new place and tries to find what's good about it. And that's a really kind of a neat thing as well. And what a great message to kids too. I mean, so,
well, I think it shows that kids are adaptable. That's one thing that, you know, as adults, we're not necessarily adaptable. If we move to a new place, it can take us a long time to assimilate to a new environment, and we don't always deal with change very well, but children really do adapt. And, you know, Jake's situation was that the traumatic moment, of course, was the destruction of the Saratoga, and that happened when he was 11 years old in the Battle of Wolf 359, and his mother was killed. And that was, like, it's one thing to move. It's another thing for your home to be destroyed and one of your parents to die in the process. And then you have to move again. And that was, we read the bit from the series Bible, and it's interesting that they never really mentioned that in the series Bible. So I don't know if the whole setup of Sisko and the Saratoga kind of came along after the initial character descriptions were written or what, because it's kind of an important thing there. But they do mention that his mother would still be alive if they hadn't lived in space. And so,
I do think, and this is an interesting thing, that the series Bible dealt with this and the show didn't. But the show does not deal with the fact that Jake has lost his mother in the sense that he might still be dealing with anger issues or something like that.
True.
It doesn't really go there.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
The part that I see is a little bit is like an emissary, the way he reacts to being on the station. And maybe this is also the part in the series Bible about he dreams of going to live on Earth, which we said that's not in the show. Maybe just a little bit like when he's frustrated about where he's going to have to sleep and O'Brien says, well, we can get you a bunk off the Enterprise. And his dad tells him, you know, that you're just going to have to rough it for a little while. I think there we see a little bit of that frustration, which might stem from the fact that, yeah, he's lost his mother. Although they didn't move to the station immediately after the Saratoga was destroyed. They had moved to Utopia Planitia Yards before that. And maybe at that point he wanted to go from Mars back to Earth, and now here he is on this space station. And maybe he wants to go back to his grandfather because he wants to have more family around with his mother being gone.
Well, and I think the other thing that also might be a real factor is that he spent his life in Starfleet facilities, you know, whether it's the Saratoga.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Miranda-class vessel. How fancy can it be?
Hey, the Miranda class is the workhorse of the fleet, Matthew. Those things have been keeping the peace around the galaxy for centuries.
That is true. And
don't dog on the Saratoga. Don't dog on the Miranda.
Well, that is true. you know, but it's also, it might be the workhorse, but it's also a tiny, tiny ship without a lot of amenities. So, and then, of course. I mean, the huge difference of being at Utopia Planitia as a station, I am sure, being the fleet yards, it probably has state-of-the-art everything.
Got a Starbucks, got a McDonald's.
It does. It's
got a Subway.
Yeah, I was going to say, you do. You've got your space bucks on every corner there. and they all have, you know, they all accidentally replicate Quark's mug, you know, the station.
No idea how that got there. Yeah. Maybe he dropped it off when they traveled back through time to Roswell. Yeah, that got dropped off as they passed by Mars.
But I think that whole going to a station where everything is run down and it's not comfortable, it has none of the aesthetics that you're used to, that you've grown up with. You know, it really does make sense that Jake bristles at that and is not really comfortable there. And I'm sure that there's still some latent frustrations about the fact that his mom's not there either. It's just his dad, and he hates being where he is, and he wishes she was still around. I am just interested and a little surprised that, you know, Deep Space Nine did a lot of dark things and went a lot of dark places a lot of times, but this is not something they really chose to talk about. It's just because they didn't want to go from Wesley, you know, being the whiz kid to Jake being kind of a depressed downer kid. I don't think that's what they were looking for. And so, I think maybe they were trying to show, you know, you get to this place, this kind of thing happens and people are more able to move on, especially with the right kind of counseling and stuff that they would have in Starfleet as well. So maybe that's what they're trying to go for. I guess we're really reading a lot into this as we think about it.
Well, we are, but you have to read a lot into Jake because he was not fleshed out in the show the way that he should have been fleshed out as a main cast member whose name is there in the title credits. And so you have to read a bit into it, but also reading that stuff into it does give some insight into his interactions with other characters.
Yeah, definitely.
Behind that. So, well, as far as his background, so Jake was born in 2355, a year after his parents met. And it's never really stated in the show that I can recall his actual place of birth, but it seems he was probably born on New Berlin because that was Sisko's first assignment out of the academy. And New Berlin is a city on the moon, Earth's moon. And Archer actually mentions it in Terra Nova. And it also is mentioned as detecting the launch of the NX Beta in first flight. So it's a very old colony from actually the 21st century. Like at least, I think 2069 is a date that's mentioned at some point. So it existed before that. So I'm going to go look tonight and find out if they've started shipping stuff up there yet, because they need to get busy building that. Although maybe, I read this in the news, maybe they're going to 3D print that moon base. So maybe that's how they'll build it. I don't know. But anyway, he was there on New Berlin. And then, as I mentioned, he was 11 years old when the Saratoga was destroyed. And then they moved to Utopia Planitia, and then they moved to DS9 in 2369, which would have made Jake 14 years old. And I have to ask you, Matthew, my son is 14 years old right now. And I have to say, Jake in Emissary does not come off, for me anyway, as 14, although apparently Sirach Lofton was right around 14 years old at the time that was being shot, so...
Yeah, he was born in 1978, in August, so he is 35, actually 36 almost. And so he's right around my age, actually, which is really interesting.
Because I always took him as younger until I really started looking into the background of the character and what the birth dates and all were. I thought he was like 10, maybe.
Yeah, I think they kind of make it ambiguous, and they kind of have maybe Jake played a little bit younger, which is funny, but by the time the first season's over and the second season starts, I mean, he shot up like a weed height-wise. And so he immediately starts to grow out of that really quickly. I think he's just one of those kids. When he started the show, he still kind of had that baby face on. And then...
Small fries, throw him back.
That's right. Exactly. So, yeah. And I think part of it had to do with maybe some of the dialogue they gave him too. It all kind of helped make him feel a little bit younger.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's his background. Let's go ahead and talk about relationships, because that's what we like to talk about here on The Orb. And for me, you may disagree, for me, the biggest relationship on the show isn't really with his dad, although that's really important, but it's with Nog.
I wouldn't say that either one is bigger. I honestly would say they both are equal, yet they just have different impacts on his life. Because as I watch the show, I can't see any other influence on him that is as big as his father. And I think it even influences his relationship with Nog. I mean, just the way that he's willing to treat Nog. I mean, what's so funny is that, especially at the beginning of the show, he's living out what his dad has taught him, even when his dad can't. You know, letting go of that prejudice against Ferengi. And they even have that conversation. And I think Benjamin is kind of shocked that his son is kind of teaching him something at this point. And
that's true.
So when I watch those two relationships, I just watch how they both kind of, work together to really shape Nog. But in the end, it was always his dad that was the bigger relationship, because that's what kind of made Jake who he is. Like, you know, especially since Jennifer had been gone, you know, it really is that father-son thing. And so, but I can see, I mean, Nog is a huge influence and a very big relationship with Jake.
Well, here's why I say that Nog is maybe a little bit more important as a character relationship for Jake. Everything that you say about his dad is absolutely true, and I see that as well. I think that with Nog, there was maybe more of a two-way, where I think Jake's influence on Nog was so important for Nog's character that no one else on the show received as much benefit from their friendship or their relationship with Jake than Nog did. And Jake also benefited greatly from his relationship with Nog. So I feel like there's a little bit more of a two-way exchange there in character development between those two than there is between Jake and his dad.
Yeah, I think that's a completely valid argument. And when you look at it like that, that's definitely something that you have to think about for sure. And I think that's one of the greatest parts about the show. You know, you really... And honestly, all the Star Trek shows, you know, you can argue relationships back and forth and which one was more important and which one should have happened. I mean, you know, Enterprise fans have been having that argument forever. Should T'Pol have been with Archer instead of Tripp? I mean, that kind of stuff. you know, so, yeah. But this is the kind of thing that they make nuanced enough shows that there's different things, that you can see in them that, you know, one fan might pull out more than the other. And I think that's what's great. But definitely the relationship with Nog and Jake is one that I think is really cool. And again, I think it went to go straight at the heart of what Star Trek was, which was about putting aside your prejudices about somebody or something and allowing that thing to stand on its own first. And so Jake never, you know, he never judges Nog for who he is. He just judges Nog based on his actions. And, you know, he's pretty vocal about the things that he doesn't agree with that Nog does. But at the same time, he never, I think, shames Nog or makes him feel horrible. He just kind of, I think, shows him what it is that is a better way. Like Jake is really a good example of somebody just living out what they actually believe, you know, again, like, especially with the conversation he has with his dad about, well, aren't we supposed to like accept people, you know, isn't that why we're out here is really to understand other people. And I think, it's strange that in a lot of ways, Jake is one of the main catalysts for what made Deep Space Nine different, which was we're here to understand what it's like to really live in this utopia. What is it really like to live in the 24th century with all these different races who don't actually agree with us all the time? How does that actually work? And Jake is actually one of the characters who shows us that first on Deep Space Nine, I think. So, you know, how he goes later on in the series is, you know, different story. But I think right at the beginning, this is a character that they're really using to kind of make an imprint of what this show is going to be about and what they're going to talk about on it.
That's an interesting point you said as the show goes on, because I was just thinking as you were talking there and describing what he's telling his dad, you know, aren't we supposed to be here to be accepting, is that in society, you know, every generation, at least you hope, and it does to some extent, not as much as it should, but every generation finds it easier to live in the world with others and how things have changed. It doesn't always feel that way because you look at the news and you see all these old rivalries resurfacing. But generally speaking, I think that overall, younger people are more accepting of different cultures, people with different beliefs, and different ways of doing things than older people in the previous generation. And then that advances with each generation. And so you would think that by the 24th century, by Roddenberry's ideal, that everyone thinks this way. But what you actually see is that's not necessarily true. Even with Starfleet officers, they have their prejudices, especially on DS9, where, you know, O'Brien hates Cardassians. Sisko's having trouble with the Ferengi. And Jake is the one who's telling him that, no, we're supposed to be more open-minded about this. So even then you see that the next generation is helping advance the society, even in this, you know, galactic scale civilization. But you mentioned as the show goes on, and as Jake grows up and more realities of life set in, he finds himself behind the battle lines in the war. There, all these things happen. He starts to become maybe a little bit more jaded as well, which is the problem why we need each next generation to remind us and give us that next little push. So it is like a, you know, two steps forward, one step back kind of thing. And we see it still continuing even in Gene Roddenberry's future in Deep Space Nine and through Jake and Nog and Benjamin Sisko and others.
Well, I definitely think that's one of those really key things, you know, especially in the war, in Angelon Prime, when Jake is behind enemy lines, he meets the soldier and everything. And it really does come up in his relationship with Nog, the big difference between these two. And, you know, Jake is not cut from the same cloth as a Starfleet officer. You know, he's unlike his dad in that way. And somebody like Nog, and it was just really interesting to see them try to tell you a story with Jake about somebody who wasn't going to pursue what we would all say we kind of like would want if we were in Star Trek land, you know, like if we could live in Star Trekville, we would want to be, you know, some sort of Starfleet officer or whatever, when in all reality, I'm an idiot when it comes to like math and science and any of that crap. So I would not be a Starfleet officer. I'd be a terrible Starfleet officer. I'd be more like Jake, honestly. But it does bring up the question that they were never really able to answer, I think, was exactly like, what is it that these people, how do they really contribute, you know, like to society? They make it seem then so much of the time in Star Trek that Starfleet's really the only way to contribute to the world, the galaxy.
Right.
And I wish that they had just given us a little bit more with Jake. I mean, writing good books, hey, I'm a book lover. I mean, I read all kinds of books. So the fact that he became a writer, I don't think is anything bad. But when you don't like make any money from it, like, do you just, I don't know. It just, it gets into all those other questions that they don't really talk about too much. But, yeah.
Well, writing is something like creative arts that it would be great if we didn't have money. Because then you can really pursue your passion, in
right.
Jake's case, writing, and you don't have to worry about anything.
That
would
true.
Be wonderful.
Yeah, it would be fantastic.
Most of us aren't in it for the money when it comes to creativity.
Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, even me, and running, I have my own blog and I write on it and I enjoy it. I still would like to, and I haven't gotten a chance because I've not had the time to sit down and write a review of Captain America, the Winter Soldier. And it's not because I don't want to, it's just because, you know, all last week and even now in the beginning of this week, I have not had the time to sit down and do that. It would be awesome if I just had nothing else to do and all I had to do was right. think of things that I just wanted to share with the world online.
Maybe you should get Jake to write your review of Captain America Winter Soldier.
Well, I could, but I don't know. I don't think he has the stylings I'm looking for as a writer on my blog, so...
Well, coming back to Nog, the influence, what I find interesting is that Jake is set up to be the son of a Starfleet officer, a commanding officer who doesn't want to go to the academy, who doesn't want to be in Starfleet, and yet it's his influence that leads Nog to become the first Ferengi to go to Starfleet Academy.
Yeah, I think that is something that's really interesting to watch, and just his impact on Nog. And it's one of those sly ways of the writers in Deep Space Nine trying to show us how wrong that Ferengi lifestyle is. Like, you know, we're not really mm-hmm. supposed to judge people in the Star Trek universe, but the writers are judging the Ferengi. And saying that that's not really the right way to live. They're making the statement in many different ways. I mean, we could have a whole show on the way the writers are sarcastically and using that.
Well, we did Ferengi values versus Federation values.
Exactly. There you go. So you should go back and listen to that episode. Just a shameless plug there. It was pretty good. I was really impressed with what Chris had to say. Yeah, definitely they're doing that. And so Nog is a way of them being able to do that. And Rom is a way of them being able to do that. And so I think it's very interesting that when we talked about Jundia, we talked about her effect on other characters and mm-hmm. that Jake really does that for this character of Nog. He has a huge impact there as well as his dad mm-hmm. having an impact as well. So I think it's a really neat thing. Again, whether Jake is your favorite character or not, he's important to the show. You know, he
right.
has a really
if you remove him
exactly.
If you remove him from the show, then all your characters change. Many of your characters change.
Exactly, for and sure. I think that's the sign of a successful character, even if it's not your favorite character.
Yeah. Well, what about his dad? We've talked a lot about his dad already as we're talking about key relationships. What else do you see in his relationship with his dad that you want to point out here?
I think the biggest thing there is honestly just the importance of a father-son relationship. And, you know, living in a world that doesn't really value that and fathers are not really valued. A lot of times, I mean, you look at television and so much of the experience you see on shows, you know, fathers are just kind of buffoons.
Yeah.
They're made fun of. They're just the family idiot that everybody kind of looks at and laughs at.
Are you talking about Phil Dunphy?
I'm talking about, you know, everyone from as much as I loved him, Tim Taylor, all the way to... you know, to Homer Simpson, just anybody on Modern Family. I mean, just all of these dads, they're just, you know, they're kind of
yeah, I know what you mean though. Yeah.
Being buffoons.
It's true in modern television. Yeah.
And so, I think the importance of having an African American father with his African American son in that kind of relationship, showing the real value of what it means to have a father who's willing to pass manhood onto his son. And, you know, Jake does not follow in his father's footsteps, but that doesn't mean that Sisko doesn't spend, you know, all of Jake's childhood and all of his teenage years really kind of imparting to him what it means to be a man, whatever decision, whatever lifestyle path that you choose. Mm-hmm. And he passes that on. I think one of the most beautiful things, honestly, is the the way that the relationship that Avery had with Serac, and that very intimate relationship that they have, I really appreciated too, showing on television that it's okay to like hug your son, you know, it's okay to kiss your son, like that's not a bad thing, you know.
Right.
I think that's another really important element that I don't think we've talked about it on the show at all, but it's something that I wish we just saw more of is fathers being really good fathers to their sons. And you see the benefit to Jake, obviously, in that, in the man that he turns out to be.
I will say that teenage sons don't necessarily want you to hug and kiss them.
This is true.
Like my son, he will spin away. He'll try to get away if you try to hug him.
But I think, you know, obviously too, it's also about letting your son know that they're loved and they're cared for no matter what they do.
Absolutely.
It's not about who they become or any of that. It's they can't earn it. And that's definitely something that I think Benjamin gave to Jake.
Yeah. And let's not forget that Jake also introduced his dad to Cassidy until death do us part. So he's actually responsible ultimately for his dad's happiness as a remarried man.
Which I think is funny because you realize that Jake and Nog and all their women watching on top of the promenade really paid off when...
it did.
they saw Cassidy come in, you know, uh-huh. And apparently at that point, you know, Jake is just talking up freighter captains, you know, who knows what else he's doing, but he finds this one's a little bit too old for him, but he thinks, man, this woman, this could be the one for dad. So,
well, you know, Jake had a taste for Dabo girls more so than freighter captains.
This is very true. But I do think that it's really a cool thing to watch when we, you know, talking about him and his dad, that, you know, he, like any good son, wants his father to be happy. And it was neat to see him really doing his best to, you know, he had lost his mother, and I knew he obviously loved Jennifer very much, but he also doesn't want his dad to be alone for the rest of his life. And I think that that's just a really neat thing to have seen as well. This is a unique relationship on television for a father and a son. And mm-hmm. I know Avery is hugely proud of it. And I know that Serac is too, and they should definitely be. It's a testament to good writing, and I think between them, when they're together on screen, fantastic acting for both of them.
Well, I don't even know how much acting it was, because they just seemed, they had real chemistry together, and they really did develop kind of a father-son relationship between Avery Brooks and Serac Lofton. And when that happens, it's very easy to pull it off on screen, because you're really not acting.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, at that point, you just it's magic on screen, and I think the writers just really got to benefit from that. So,
what about Jake and his grandfather? We don't get to see them together very much, but we do get to see them together at times. And some of Jake's backstory was the fact that he did help out in Cisco's Creole Kitchen, a place where apparently you serve food for free because there's no money on earth. And he did help out there, you know, scrubbing oysters, peeling potatoes, helping out his grandfather. And what did you think about the times when we did see them together?
You know, what I thought was great about that was again, the generational aspect that you got, you know, seeing father and son and father and son. I thought that was great. You got to see both sides, and what was so fantastic about his relationship with his grandfather is that it was really just an extension of his relationship with his father. His grandfather is very much a father figure to him as well, and somebody that he looks up to, he thinks the world of, who has taught him a lot, who has passed on many life lessons, you know, has spent so much time investing in him and also caring for him. And I think that was a great thing to see as well, because, you know, you saw Benjamin and his father, and you saw Benjamin, his son, and, you know, a good grandfather had passed down to a father, which passed down to a son. And it was a really, again, just just unique experience to see on TV, that kind of thing. And of course, Brock Peters and Ciarán Loftin and Avery Brooks all have great chemistry together when they're on screen. And it's fantastic. Who would have thought that that would be the case? I mean, you know, Brock Peters had been doing, you know, other Star Trek before. And so they just bring him in as somebody that they like a lot to fill the role. But he really works with these two actors. And it creates an instant believable relationship on screen, so that I believe that there's a huge history between Jake and his grandfather, even if I don't really get to see it.
Yeah, you did feel that way. I think the fact that his grandfather was also a civilian helped a lot, because with Jake being someone that didn't want to follow the Starfleet path, you can see where there would be that bond there. A male role model for him in the family who was not a Starfleet officer.
Yeah, definitely. I honestly never thought about that before, Chris. That is a great point.
Yeah. What about Cassidy? You know, this one has had the potential to be very touchy, because whether you've lost your mother or your parents are simply divorced and another woman steps in and takes on that role of a mother within the family unit, that can be kind of tough there. What did you think about the relationship between Cassidy and Jake?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the good thing for Jake is that his parents hadn't got divorced. Honestly, it's easier, I think, if you lose a parent than have parents get divorced sometimes. It can be very hurtful being a child of that myself.
Yeah, same for me, but I was very young, so I don't, I don't know, I don't have a lot of memories of the aftermath. So,
unfortunately, I was not. I was in my 20s when it happened.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That would be really difficult.
It was very difficult. And it is a difficult thing to have that remarriage then for one of your parents and everything. So I think that in a lot of ways, Jake has it easier in that. And so that his relationship with Cassidy is something that he wants for his dad and he desires for his dad to have. And obviously Jake and Cassidy had already known each other a little bit, and he had a relationship with her where he respected her, he liked her. She was somebody who shared interests that both he and his dad had as well. So it was somebody he was going to enjoy having as a
baseball.
You know, exactly. He was going to have a great stepmother, he was somebody that I think immediately he knew, this is a woman that I would want to be around our family for the rest of our lives. Yeah. So,
and he's old enough that she can be a friend, a stepmother, but a friend, as opposed to someone who is seen as stepping in and trying to take the place of his mother, I think.
Yeah, I think that is one of the biggest things as well. It's a really cool thing to see that kind of relationship again work out. And Deep Space Nine, again, they're just really doing a lot of things that you don't see on television much. And
especially not in Star Trek.
Yeah, not at all. And I think that was one of the coolest things, that, you know, the dichotomy of TNG to DS9, you know, TNG is so removed from those kind of relationships. I mean, so many shows have kind of made fun of, the relationship between Beverly and Wesley and stuff. And it's like they were just almost afraid to really just kind of explore what relational life was like. Like, people were almost above that or something. And
I think they didn't want to. I mean, that wasn't the basis of the show. You know, the show, if they did that, then they wouldn't be focused on visiting planets and the science fiction Star Trek story element of it, which was really the premise of TNG. I think that's probably the main reason, and I think some of it is the time that it was written.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah.
So, but it's funny because they had created these relationships on TNG. They just don't do anything with them.
They just don't
like,
do
you know,
much
I mean,
with them, yeah.
Whether it's Beverly and her son or Beverly and, you know, Picard or any of these things, Troy
felt
and Riker.
Very static.
Yeah.
Right? Like nothing ever really changes. Nothing really changes. Right. It's just like, it's day after day, kind of the same relationship. So.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
What about Kira? Now, the final scene of the series is Jake and Kira looking out the window together. And what that was kind of a surprising final scene, I think, for a lot of people. What led up to that? I mean, what did that say about the relationship between the two of them?
Well, I think this is one of those that a lot of people might miss. But I think that in that last season... in the last two seasons, especially when they are trying to get the station back and Jake is stayed, one, Kira's furious with him, just as Sisko is, but at the same time, you know, Jake really starts to prove himself with the Resistance and be a big help to Kira, and be somebody just like his father who's willing to put his life on the line for what he believes in. You know, even though Jake is not in Starfleet, he's risking his life to try and get the station back under the control of the Federation. And I think that that really does create a bond between him and Kira. I think she has a newfound respect for Jake and who he is. Mm-hmm. I think it deepens their relationship because they're having to trust each other on a level that a soldier does, you know. In the way that she had to trust all the people in the Resistance, as a young child, you know, fighting Cardassians, it has a way of bonding people together. And, and then I think what it leads to is that end scene, which is really beautiful, of two people lamenting the loss of the soul of Deep Space Nine. It's a beautiful scene because, for Kira, you know, she's lost a friend, a mentor, and a religious icon. And then, of course, Jake, he's lost his father and his best friend in a lot of ways. And something that can never be replaced in his life if his father doesn't return. So it's a melancholy way to end the show. And yet it fits so perfectly with Deep Space Nine, which is really a show about the fact that everything changes all the time.
Yeah.
And which, again, as you said, is the complete opposite of the kind of staticness that you got on The Next Generation. And so thankful that Ira Stephen Bear, that they just kind of let him run with the show.
Do you think that the final scene of The Next Generation, I love the scene.
Oh,
the poker table
scene.
And Picard
Fantastic.
Comes in. I mean, it's a brilliant scene. I love it.
Probably the best of the show, really, for me.
Yeah, but when you talk about static, I just thought of this as you're saying that it almost did seem to indicate that for that crew, everything would continue to just stay the same and stay static. And the one thing that changed was that now Picard is going to maybe be a little bit more open and a little closer with his crew than he was before. But for everyone else, tomorrow is another day like the days before. Whereas with Deep Space Nine, like you said, it's a melancholy thing and it's the show's about the fact that things constantly change. But I think also the ending sends the message that things will continue to change and there really is never any closure.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that I could also read The Next Generation end as that by Picard walking into that room, that not only is that going to change in his life, but he's going to be making other changes. Because to me, that was the point where I thought, okay, this man is actually probably going to pursue Beverly now. He's going to do things that he never thought he would, because he's getting to that point in life where it you know, you either move forward or you die. you know, and he doesn't want to, I don't think, die the way, especially with all that he just experienced and the all good things. So very much, I think you can definitely read it in a bunch of different ways. But
yeah.
Whereas in Deep Space Nine, it really does leave you with just that one, a bunch of feelings, and a bunch of them are, wow, like this ends a lot like life does, which is
mm-hmm.
good, but can also leave you feeling a lot of other feelings all at the same time as well. I think it did a great job of also picturing that somehow life was going to go on for those characters like Kira and Jake. And there was probably going to be an even stronger bond between those two. So I'm glad that we brought them up in this, because I think it might not be his most important relationship, but I think it's something that, you know, obviously gets explored in the novels later on a little bit, as
right.
she feels very responsible for Jake once his father's gone and what happens to him. So, yeah. And again, made for just a beautiful, beautiful scene. And it was so well acted by those two.
It was. Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk about a few of our favorite Jake moments on the show. I think we have two episodes that it's a given that we're going to throw out because these are the quintessential Jake episodes, right, on the series, The Visitor and Explorers. And The Visitor, I mean, it's one of the most touching episodes of all of Star Trek for me. It's a brilliant performance by Siroc Lofton, a brilliant performance by Tony Todd. It's a wonderful story, and that's probably my favorite Jake episode.
Yeah, Chris, goodness, not more could be said about The Visitor. I mean, I do think our show that we did with John Tenuto, we cover very much in detail just how good this show is for Jake, yeah. the character. Siroc Lofton is fantastic in it as well, and so... there couldn't be a better episode, and honestly, you know, it's one of the top five episodes of any Star Trek. So
yeah, I agree.
It is really top notch, and shockingly enough, it's a whole episode about Jake and the relationship he has right. with his father.
Yeah. So there's that one. Explorers, we've also talked about extensively here on the Orb, as I don't know if we've ever done an Explorers episode per se, but we've talked about it in a lot of other episodes. And then we've done it on the Ready Room before, where we talked extensively about it. And it's just, it's the great moment. I mean, The Visitor deals with Jake and the loss of his father and what he would do to get his father back. Whereas Explorers is very much about the bonding moment between father and son.
Definitely. And I love that show. I love the way that it deals, again, with the father-son relationship. I love the way that those two just interact that whole time. And, you know, the way Sisko is talking to Jake about his writing and encouraging him lovingly and giving him some great constructive feedback. I love the way the father-son relationship goes there, where they're you know, that you can see the son is kind of worried about his dad, you know, not having anybody around, and he doesn't want to, you know, he feels that responsibility there, only being the only other one around and that kind of stuff. So
right.
it's just a great episode kind of dealing with the realities of relational life, especially like in a single family.
Yeah. And okay, so those are the two givens. What's another episode featuring Jake or a Jake moment from an episode or something that stands out for you?
Well, I think that, and I think this might be a little bit of a surprise to you, but for me, it's Valiant.
Okay.
And
yeah, I thought about that. Yeah.
It's such an interesting episode because it has a lot to do with the dichotomy between Rom and Jake.
Mm-hmm.
And that, the way that Rom is just kind of really sucked into this whole Red Squad thing.
Red Squad's awesome.
Exactly. It is until it gets everybody killed.
That's right.
and you know, Jake and his kind of cynical nature that he has actually really does a great job. And I think he gets that from his dad, where he's very skeptical about things until he can, you know, make sure they're actually legit. And of course, at the same time, he's also measuring these people against his father, and he understands what real Starfleet officers are really like. And so I just love that episode. I think it's a great Jake episode, because Jake is in the right the whole time in that episode. And he just can't make anybody else really see that, that these kids have kind of gone power crazy with, you know, a 30-ton starship. So,
well, they're playing Starfleet, right?
Exactly. You know, it's like they have their fort out back, except it's an actual real starship. Right. And they're really enjoying it. But, you know, it's all fun and games till everybody get killed.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about that episode as well. I didn't put it on my list, but I'm glad that you did, because I was curious what you thought about it. For me, there are moments. The one that I wrote down was A Man Alone, and the reason is that that Jake is actually concerned about Nog's education and whether or not Nog can read and write. And the fact that Jake is concerned about Nog in this way reflects how his father and his mother raised him. And going all the way back, I said at the beginning that there was a moment that I felt highlighted what was in the series Bible of Jake being dedicated to doing his best. I think it's not just being dedicated to doing his best, but helping others do their best as well. And we know that his influence on Nog really helped Nog join Starfleet and go to the academy. And of course, Nog could have never gotten into the academy if Jake hadn't really pushed him to actually take literacy seriously in the beginning and actually do something more than thieve for his uncle.
Yeah, that is a great episode, Chris. I'm glad you chose it. Again, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the conversations that he has with his father about Nog and what that really means, and I think this is a fantastic representation of what the character of Jake stood for, and what they did well when they were writing Jake well. And so it's a really great episode.
Anything else on your list that you want to highlight?
You know, the other episode that I really kind of thought of that I thought was an interesting Jake episode is, Nor the Battle to the Strong. It's kind of a given, but I think in a lot of ways, but it's such a powerful episode for Jake, really kind of coming to grips with what it means to be somebody who has courage and somebody who's a coward. And it was such an interesting episode because Jake comes down really hard on himself, in the episode. And yet he does quite a good job for somebody who has absolutely no training whatsoever in this kind of environment. Like, you know, Starfleet officers go through all sorts of intensive training to be able to, you know, handle this kind of situation. And Jake has none whatsoever. So I think he's really hard on himself in the episode. I'm actually pretty impressed for somebody like him that he, you know, did so well. But it was one of those episodes where they had kind of really figured out this is a good story we can tell with this character. And this is the benefit of having this kind of character around. I wish they had just been able to figure out a few more of those for him, especially in those later years, because I think this was a really strong, fantastic episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I agree. Well, at the beginning, we gave you a few trivia questions, and we said we would come back to you at the end of the show with the answers. And so, Matthew, here we go. How many episodes? Now, there are 173 episodes of Deep Space Nine. Jake's name, Strock Lofton's name, is there in the credits. How many of these 173 episodes does Jake actually appear in?
Well, out of the 173 episodes, Jake appears in only 71 of them, which is kind of shocking. I think it's really interesting to see wow, you know, out of all the times that you see Jake, it's less than you think, probably, in the show, which is, it's kind of a shocking thing.
Yeah, it's not so shocking to me that a character like Jake would only appear in 71 episodes. It's just the fact that someone who's right up there top billing with Avery Brooks and Anna Visitor and all of the cast would only be in 71 episodes. That's a little bit surprising to me.
Yes, it is. And at the same time, again, I do have to say, I think he becomes one of those characters that even when you don't see him, it's like, you know, he's there somewhere. So it's kind of an interesting deal.
He is there. Now, in the seventh season, again, he was a regular, but he only appeared in 9 episodes of the seventh season. And there were two recurring characters, who appeared more times than Jake did in the seventh season. And those are
Nog and Damar.
That's right. They each appeared 11 times compared to Jake's 9 appearances. And here's the big one. Which character throughout the run of the series appeared way more times than Jake did? In fact, this character appears in 92 episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Well, Chris, it's very interesting to find out that the character of Morn appeared more times than Jake Sisko, with 92 appearances. This blows my mind.
That number blows my mind, yeah. It's not even the fact that Morn is there more often than Jake is. The fact that Morn is in 92 of 173 episodes, that was amazing. Because, I mean, you do feel like Morn is always there somewhere, but 92 episodes, I didn't realize that he's there that often. But if you think about it, there are those episodes where they're panning down to Quarks, they're going through the promenade, and then Morn will walk across in front of camera. Well, there you go. There's an episode with Morn in it.
Well, and it is, I mean, almost every episode that you see where you're in Quarks, you really do come across Morn. I mean, he's almost always sitting there at the bar. And so it's hard not to have him in the episode.
And you spend so much time in Quarks. You know, there's that run early on. I think it happens a lot in the second season, maybe first as well, but where it feels like episode after episode after episode opens with a scene inside Quark's bar with Odo talking to Quark.
Right, which, you know, at that point, I think it's probably, they really love that set. They were going to get their most they could out of it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, here's one more bit of trivia for you, Matthew, to wrap up. Jake is one of only two main characters since The Next Generation not to have appeared as a hologram. Who's the other character?
Well, unfortunately, the only other character who has not appeared as a hologram is Ezri Dax.
That's right.
Which is, as you know, for me, quite disappointing. So
very disappointed, because more than anything, you would love to have your own personal holographic Ezri Dax, right?
Yes, I would. I'm not going to lie about that. I don't know why I should. And I'm not going to be ashamed of it.
All right. So there we go. That's our discussion of Jake Sisko. I hope everyone enjoyed it. And I'm sure everyone is shocked by how long we were able to talk about Jake Sisko today. But I hope we brought you some new things to think about. But Jake's not the only thing we've been discussing here on the network over the past week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Montgomery Scott.
It's really just there to tell a story that they couldn't tell with Kirk or Spock or McCoy.
This is true. An episode where Kirk is framed for the murder of a hooker would be...
Right. Awesome.
Completely different. It would be awesome, but...
Earl Grey.
Ships of TNG Part 2.
Commander Riker, why would you protect the inferior ship? I want its treasure. I want the other ship.
Darren, how long have you been keeping that one in your pocket?
Yeah, you like tell that. Us. That was good.
Do a Ferengi.
The Ready Room.
Scientific method.
She tells the woman that comes on the bridge, and she's like, "Well, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I'm gonna drive into these stars. It's gonna be great." Like, it's like, I'm just like,
the orb.
Till death do us part.
His are very quizzical in nature. They're of the scientist. They're of the somebody who is willing to accept. Okay, what is this reality? What's going on? She's just all like, "Tell me what to do right now." You know, like,
right.
There's nothing spiritual about her.
To the journey.
One versus doctor's orders.
I was working full time on top of being a full time student, and I
listen. I don't want to hear your excuses. Okay, I don't want to hear them.
Like, life was happening, and
a great man once told me, if something's important to you, you make the time. Warp 5.
Undeveloped enterprise stories.
But the idea here is that Porthos would become intelligent and would be the only member of the crew capable of communicating with a canine alien. So even Hoshi apparently couldn't figure out this dog language.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
If Bull, Chimera.
I'd love to see an X-Files one shot with Scully and the hookers.
With, you know? Scully and the hookers?
Yeah.
That's a great name for a band.
We can call it Scully and the Hookers.
Melodic Treks.
Five musical favorites.
You know, I don't completely hate the opening theme. I just really think that Archer's theme should be the opening credits.
Continuing Mission.
Star Trek Axelar with Alec Peters.
That's what we posit. We say it makes sense that at this point we know it's from TOS. They're not integrated, so our crews are not integrated, and we make a point of that. We don't avoid it. We make a point of it. And in Prelude to Axanar, they talk about that.
Literary Treks.
IDW Alien Spotlight Part 1.
Well, Chris, it's okay because they can see the Romulans from their house.
That's right.
So, from space, you know, you betcha, you know, that's okay. I can see the Romulans from my starship. It's going to be fine.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week. And some days we even have two shows for you. And you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can download or stream from our website. And while you're in iTunes, be sure to visit our new home, where you'll find our dedicated artist page and section where we're able to now group our shows and our episodes to make it easier for you to find past content that maybe you haven't heard before. We are quickly approaching, this is hard for me to believe, we're quickly approaching 1,000 episodes here on Trek FM. So there's a wealth of interviews, character analyses, episode discussions, and all kinds of stuff for you here on the network that you may not even know is there. And a great way to find it now is by going over to our new home in iTunes. And you can get there by simply going to itunes.com/trekfm. And while you're there, if you enjoy the orb, please take a moment to leave us a star rating and a written review. We love to hear from you, and it helps other Deep Space Nine fans find the show as they're looking for their podcasts. Matthew, since the last time we recorded, we got some feedback from listener Greg Mullenby, who is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And Greg wrote, "I just wanted to write to you to thank you for what you do for the Trek FM Network. I've been listening to three of the shows, Earl Grey, The Orb, and To the Journey!
To the Journey!"
And I have been loving your conversations regarding the episode of the final chapter that you have been doing the last couple of months. I am really looking forward to those episodes because of how deep and insightful the conversations have been. And Matthew, I guess maybe next show we'll be coming back around to the final chapter, won't we? It's about that time.
Yeah, it is about that time, which I love that time, Chris.
Final chapter time.
That's right.
It's kind of like, it's like Miller time for Star Trek fans.
Yeah. I like it.
Right. You know that old commercial, Star Trek time.
Yeah,
Final
Star Trek time.
Miller time.
Final time. Well, you know how they had, what is it? Miller, Genuine Draft was the champagne of beers. I'd say that the end of Deep Space Nine is the champagne of Star Trek.
I like it. I like it. All right. Well, Greg also says, anyway, another reason I'm writing is I recently have decided to delve into the novels, and I currently have a thread going on Trek BBS, which, of course, Matthew, you talked to Greg over there on Trek BBS, in the TrekLit forum about what novels are good to start with. And he's decided to get Twist of Faith, which is the omnibus that includes the first few books in the DS9 relaunch series. And he says, at the time that he was writing this, he said, last night I finished Avatar Book 1, which was the start of the DS9 relaunch. And because of your show, reading Avatar Book 1, I really enjoyed it and is looking forward to the books he can read in the future. Because my interest in Trek has been rejuvenated. I've always been a Star Trek fan going back to when I was just 4 years old. I'm almost 30 now. But I'm excited that there is more new stuff set in the 24th century to explore, and the Trek FM network of podcasts has helped that renewed interest. And I'm really, really glad to hear that, Greg, that we're able to rejuvenate your interest not only in Deep Space Nine, but in Star Trek in general.
Yeah, Greg, it's great. I'm with you. For me, the lit just really helped that continue for me, especially as, well, I was disappointed in things like in Nemesis and whatnot, but the books really helped keep me going, especially the Deep Space Nine relaunch. So I'm so glad that you've jumped in there. It's the same place I jumped in, and welcome to the club.
Definitely. So, Greg, thanks again for your message and for everyone else. If you'd like to send us your thoughts, you can do that in a variety of ways. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about Deep Space Nine, the orb, anything about Star Trek. And if social media is your thing, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And you'll find us on Twitter, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek under username TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not working together with Jake and Nog to work some deals to get your hands on one of those mobile emitters, Esri Dax Edition, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing literary treks with you, where we talk books and comics, as Greg had mentioned in his nice feedback there. And we really enjoy, we're actually going to be getting back to the Deep Space Nine relaunch very soon, folks. And I'm not just saying that, it's coming up. So we've got it on the calendar.
It is on the schedule now.
It is on the schedule. So,
book will be Mission Gamma Twilight, by the way. So if you haven't read it and you want to be prepared for that show, which will be coming up, in, I don't know, 3-4 weeks, maybe, go grab Twilight.
And I would suggest you do that because it's a long one.
It is a long one.
And then, of course, you can find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not hanging out with Jake and Nog, swinging your legs over the balcony there, just watching the women walk by, where can we find you?
Well, what am I supposed to do, Matthew? I'm on a station. There are all these Bajoran women coming in all the time. I mean, come on, you'd be up there with us too, right?
Hey, yeah. I mean, all those hotties that Jake dated, I understand. Dabo girls and whatnot. So Bajoran women are beautiful.
They are. They are. Now, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, besides doing literary treks with you, Matthew, you can find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise, the way we talk about Deep Space Nine here. You can find me on MatterStream, which is an interview show about science and social issues and creative things. You can find me on Continuing Mission, which is all about Star Trek fan series and independent productions. And then every week, I host The Ready Room, along with other hosts from all around the network. Sometimes Matthew is there as well. And we talk about Star Trek news and all 5 live-action Star Trek series on that show. Before we let you go, we'd like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com, the best source for audiobooks you'll find online. They have a lot of Star Trek books on there. Overall, they have over 150,000 audiobooks for you to choose from. They have new releases, bestsellers, classics. Like I said, lots of Star Trek books as well. A few DS9 books are there. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. And the way you do that is to go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up and choose any book you want. And then if at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose because you get to keep that audiobook. But if you like podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks. And if you're not getting them from Audible right now, if you're getting them from somewhere else, you definitely need to check out Audible because they have the best selection and really great pricing as well. When you sign up as a member, you get your credits. And most books, you can get one book for one credit. So it's a great way to get audiobooks. I've been doing it for 14 years. No plans to stop anytime soon. And by trying out Audible, you'll be helping us keep the Orb coming to you every week. So again, go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. And we really thank Audible for their support of the Orb and the network. One more thing you can do to help us keep the Orb coming to you is to make a donation to the network. And actually, we want to give a shout out to Greg Mullenby, who wrote in to us. He also made a generous donation to the network recently. And Greg, we really appreciate you doing that. And for everyone else, if you go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find different contribution levels that you can choose from. And we have some original alien artwork for you as a thank you. We have a lot of expenses related to production, hosting, bandwidth, storage, and whatnot that's necessary to bring the shows to you every week. They're free for you to download, but we do have to cover those costs. So we really appreciate any help that you can give us in keeping the network going. Again, that's at trek.fm/donate. So go check it out and let us know which aliens you like as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.